what you think the New Orleans Saints offense might look like with Taysom Hill under center tomorrow against the Falcons.
Well, first of all, Josh, when I saw the number pop up Canada, like, I got the biggest smile on my face, so it's good to be with you. There's so much going on, so thanks for having me on here today. Wow, what a storyline, right? I mean, Jameis Winston, it's kind of interesting because I've had the Saints a couple times with the NFL Network. I cover really any big games around the league from week to week, and you know, Sean Payton sort of alluded to Jameis Winston at some point, if I recall correctly, him being sort of a Teddy Bridgewater situation where they developed Teddy, as you know, for a couple of years there in New Orleans as he came back from that injury. And so I really thought Jameis Winston, you know, would get the opportunity tomorrow on Sunday. But Taysom is a guy they really like. He's versatile, and I think they trust him. And so, you know, any game in the National Football League, and I think they're on the road at Atlanta this week, you want to go with the guy who you trust. And I think Sean Payton trusts Taysom Hill.
Yeah, it does certainly seem like it. And they gave him that extension for a good chunk of money. And clearly, you know, I know a lot of people on Twitter at points this year, when Taysom Hill gets in, they groan. But he has been effective this year. And I guess a lot of people seemed really surprised that it wasn't going to be Jameis. But I don't know. I guess I wasn't stunned because, you know, Sean Payton's been leaving a trail of breadcrumbs for a pretty long while that he feels like Taysom Hill is probably his quarterback of the future after Drew Brees retires.
Well, one would argue, and I stand corrected, they are at home, which is an even a better thing because they're playing a pretty bad team this year in the Falcons. So, you know, you're at home, you have the comfort of yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'd go that far. I just think Sean Payton is vastly underrated as a play caller. I was talking to a friend of mine in the league a couple of days ago, and I said, who do you think is the best play caller right now in football? And he told me Sean Payton. And this guy works with a lot of quarterbacks around the league. And so I found that interesting. And he you know, he's kind of a mad scientist. We think about Bill Belichick and the Patriots defensively, him being that mad scientist. Sean Payton is the equivalent for me right now, his longevity both in New Orleans and as a play caller in the NFL, to be that good for so long with really, you know, a game that adjusts to the opposing team, but has such a really good intermediate game, and the way they use Alvin Kamara, who runs the route tree, to me, just really the most versatile running back in football. It's been impressive. So that'll be a game I have my eye on. I'm actually headed to Indy today, Josh. Yeah. I have a big game tomorrow with the Packers and the Colts.
Yes, and I want to ask you about that. You're heading to Indy, and it's one of the games of the week. You know, there's a couple of gems tomorrow. You know, it's going to be a good afternoon and evening with the Raiders and Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. But, yeah, certainly Green Bay, Indy, and quite a contrast of styles. You know, you've obviously got the high-flying, high-octane Packers and the kind of grinded-out Colts who have a great defense and, you know, have been getting timely plays in the offense. How do you expect Green Bay to go about attacking what has been one of the most stout defenses that the Colts have in the league?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you're right on target. I mean, this defense, I've had the Colts a bunch, and they're really good. I mean, they're fast. They're not necessarily complicated in what they do, but they, as Rodgers talked about, Aaron Rodgers this week, and Matt LaFleur of the Packers, they're a vision defense. They see things extremely well. They watch the quarterback's eyes. And they're just solid on all three levels. You know, when I think about hoops and I think about leadership, I'm so glad, by the way, the Raptors shirt up Van Fleet. But, you know, I think about leadership and I think about in hoops where I played basketball. If you can get five guys or gals to play on strings, what I call it, it means they're in unison. And I just think the Colts defense plays on strings, meaning the front, the defensive front, the linebackers at the second level, and then the back end. So, I know Rodgers said this week they make you earn everything. So I think we'll see. We'll see. You know, it's a measuring stick for both teams. Rodgers downplayed it this week, Josh. But, shoot, when you're playing the number one defense and you're the number six offense, and by the way, Rodgers is putting up maybe numbers better than his MVP seasons years ago, back 2012, 11, that time frame. Wow, we're in for one, I think, tomorrow.
Stacey Dales is with us. Yeah, and like looking at the Colts offense, it's been fascinating to watch because, you know, Phillip Rivers, some weeks he looks pretty good, other weeks he looks like, you know, he might be toast, like the arm strength, you know, is a question mark. The run game, some weeks it's Taylor, some weeks it's Hines, some weeks it's Wilkins. Michael Pittman looked great last week on Thursday Night Football. I'm curious, you know, what kind of offensive attack we might see tomorrow, you know, from Frank Reich and that Colts offense going up against Green Bay.
Well, listen, I think Green Bay's defense has a lot of good pieces, but you know, they can be challenged in the run game. So can the rookie Jonathan Taylor run the ball? And I believe the Colts have the best offensive line in football. Not a lot of people, Josh, want to talk about the O-line. They're my favorite of the game. I mean, I believe games are won in the trenches, and the Colts have the best, to me, offensive line in football. They are just extraordinary. I mean, they've given up, that they lead the league in sack percentage. So when you think about what you're saying with Rivers, right? He doesn't escape the pocket. He doesn't have speed. He doesn't, you know, and he's the first to admit it. But yeah, if they protect it, run it a little bit, then there you get Pittman down the field, maybe get T.Y. in a breakout type performance against a secondary that's been banged up for the past couple of weeks. Jair Alexander has been, you know, dinged up, and Kevin King, two of their starting secondary players, and question marks also heading into this game. So, you know, it'll be interesting. It always is on Sundays.
I'm curious, you know, looking at the Packers and specifically the relationship between Rodgers and Coach Matt LaFleur. They had a great year last year. I mean, there were some growing pains some weeks where Rodgers, you know, maybe wasn't super comfortable in the offense. This year, it seems like they are of one mind. Like, they're completely simpatico and everything's gone great so far. So is this just a case, you think, of both of them more comfortable with one another in the second year of their relationship?
Yeah, I'm going to have to steal that word, simpatico, Josh. That's perfect.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, I have to take that one from you, my friend. because
you got it.
It.
I'm glad I could give it.
100. But, you know, hey, it's been seamless this year. And I think when you pick Jordan Love with the first pick in the draft, Aaron Rodgers is like, well, I may not finish my career here. So, you know, put the, you know, the bad verbiage aside, or, you know, the choice words aside, I mean, he's a man on a mission. I asked his receiver, Davante Adams, this week, you know, what do you see with Rodgers right now in the MVP level? He's like, absolutely MVP level. But his mentality right now is simply off the charts. And I think the relationship's good because Matt LaFleur doesn't step into it with a huge ego. He's very collaborative. And when you get these young coaches and these quarterbacks that are narrowly together in terms of their age, and they can function that way with cohesion, I think it works, and it works for them. But, man, the NFL's been interesting this year. I will tell you, just overall, you think about MVP talks and the way Russell Wilson's playing, and Aaron Rodgers has an argument, and we'll see how this thing shakes out as we head into Week 11.
Yeah, I agree. I think for the first 5-6 weeks of the season, it was fair to say that the Russell Wilson MVP coronation was in full effect. But, you know, he's brought other guys back into the equation. And like Rodgers, like you said, has played great, and Mahomes has also played great. And you probably look at those three as kind of the leaders in the clubhouse right now as we pass the halfway point. But I guess, yeah, you know, I wonder what it is about Rodgers. I feel like we're not really talking about him in the same way that we talk about Wilson and that we obviously talk about Mahomes. Is it just maybe, you know, he's been around for so long that we almost maybe take the greatness sometimes a little bit for granted?
I think that's exactly it. I mean, he has been around longer than those two aforementioned. You look at Patrick Mahomes right now, the guy's 8-1, his only loss coming to Las Vegas. So now we're going to see them tomorrow, you know, rematch. And that could have implications just as far as the Raiders go. So, but, you know, we come to expect it with these quarterbacks, but the younger ones, we're kind of like every year, we're looking at Lamar Jackson, for instance, right now with Baltimore. And, you know, it hasn't been as easy for him this year because defenses adjust and they figure you out. He's the MVP last year, and now teams kind of, hey, now we know how to play this guy. I think with quarterbacks like Russell and Patrick Mahomes, and Lamar is amazing, and there's so many other good ones that we won't even get to in our chat here. But, you know, Patrick can take over a game without coaching. And what I mean is, when you have a Fred VanVleet, you can hey, when the moment comes and you need to make a play, he can make that play call for you. And so when you have quarterbacks that do that, they can take over games. They are literally the coach on the field. I just think it's just super advantageous. And when you look at Mahomes, you look at Russell, and you look at Aaron Rodgers, you know, think of all the greats, Drew Brees, Roethlisberger, Tom Brady in Tampa. They can take over the game when they need to, regardless of the what the play call is, and they can run that hurry-up offense on their own volition. And Rodgers is doing that as well as anybody this year. I just think that we do take for granted what he does. Frank Reich, who's going to see tomorrow, the head coach of the Colts, said he gets the ball out faster than any player I've ever seen. I mean, you know, Reich was an amazing backup quarterback with the Buffalo Bills for years. Yeah. And one of the best to do it. And so for him to say that, to me, that's praiseworthy.
So we talked a little bit about Lamar and the struggles that he's had, especially throwing outside the numbers. And the offense just – even the run game hasn't quite been as sharp this year. You know, Ingram's missed some time, and it just hasn't looked as great. You know, the rematch of the divisional round tomorrow in the same stadium where Tennessee, you know, kind of kicked their butts pretty good last January. Both teams are coming in kind of reeling a little bit. No one seems to be playing great on really any side of the ball. I guess, what do you expect from those two teams in what's a pretty crucial game for both of them?
Yeah, I think there's a revenge factor. I mean, you know, the Ravens, for all the glory and the best running team in the NFL last year, Josh, got bumped out by Tennessee. So that comes into the equation always in this league. Pride is always on the line. The game, you know, when you look at the Ravens, they're extremely good, underrated defensively. I think, you know, when you think about being the number one scoring defense in football, which they are, it's very simple. I mean, they don't allow you in the end zone, and they're outstanding on third down defense, so that they force you off the field and they keep you out of the end zone. So I think it's a matchup there to see what really Ryan Tannehill can do with a top 10 offense and what Derrick Henry can do against this Baltimore defense that's also pretty stout against the run. But, you know, when you flip it around and Tennessee defensively, they've given up some yards this year, especially in the pass game. So this could be an opportunity now for Lamar Jackson to get going and get those legs going. And, you know, we'll see if he can get some of those shots, like you said, outside the numbers. You know, where is the arm? Where is the pass game for the Ravens? They are the 31st ranked passing offense in the league. So that's been exposed a little bit. I'll be interested to see if they can unleash it a bit against a defense that struggled a little bit in the back.
Stacey Dales is with us. I got to ask you about Miami because, you know, they've won five straight. Tua continues to develop, looked really good last week against the Chargers. Their point differential is good. Defense looks great. They're right in the playoff mix. I think they've got a wild card spot right now. Are you buying that they can stay in the mix the entirety of the season, or do you think that they might be heading for, I guess, a little bit of a come down?
Yeah, this is a sneaky conversation right here, right? They're 6-3. You're right. They're sitting at sixth right now in the AFC, which who would have thought? Like, tell me a quarterback isn't important, right? I mean, when you think about it, and the coaching and Flores and how they've rebuilt it and retooled it. And you're right. They've won five in a row. There are only three losses coming at the start of the season to New England, which we didn't know what they would be. Buffalo, who's really good. And I think Seattle, if I'm not mistaken. So I think Miami is interesting in this conversation. And, you know, I look at their schedule, by the way, Josh. They have Denver, the New York Jets, and the Cincinnati Bengals. Those are their next three games. That could put them potentially at eight straight victories. So, shoot, we'll see. I mean, they've made a lot of improvements. Again, they keep people out of the end zone defensively, and, you know, they're able to score a little bit of late.
Oof. Bills fans, you know, cover your ears hearing the possibility of the Dolphins, you know, winning eight in a row and being 9-3. You want to talk about what Bills fans, you know, like I don't know if it'll necessarily get there, but I'm pretty sure these two teams, Miami and Buffalo, play each other in week 17 and in the regular season finale in what should be frigid Orchard Park, New York, because they played a couple of early in the season down in Miami. Like there's a non-zero chance that that game could end up being a winner gets the AFC East. Like that's how solid the Dolphins seem to be from top to bottom.
Yeah, there's no question. This division's been so interesting to me this year, Josh, because they, like you're right, they have to finish the season at Buffalo, which is very difficult to do, especially think about the temperatures are going to be in, you know, at that stage in January, right? They're going to be in cold weather. So there's right there, you know, a test for you. But, you know, New England has been, you know, Cam Newton talked about coming off COVID and bless it, he was okay. But he had a almost like this COVID fatigue. He ran out of stamina. It's been very weird. They've had a lot of issues this year with personnel being available. And so I think, yeah, you're right. I mean, this thing could very well come down to Buffalo and Miami as the season narrows.
So before we let you go, and I know you've got I don't know if it's a short drive or if you've got a flight to Indianapolis, so we want to get you out of here. But you mentioned you played basketball. You know, you were the third overall pick in the WNBA draft, and you know, had a solid career, and you know, now you're covering the NFL and have had quite a journey in your career. I want to ask you about, you know, your, I guess, thoughts on where the WNBA is now, you know, compared to when you were playing. Seems like they're on a really good path. They had a really successful season in the wobble. Mm-hmm. You know, Sue Bird continues to defy Father Time, and she was terrific, and they win another championship. And it just seems like, you know, for the first time, the WNBA has really, really good, positive forward momentum going forward. So I guess kind of your thoughts on where the league is as a former player.
Yeah, I was number one proud of and impressed by the NBA and WNBA for the bubble just in itself. I mean, it's such a feat, right? I think, you know, the inception being back in 97, so the fact that it has survived a couple of seasons and, you know, when you think about the fact that Sue Bird is still playing at the extraordinary level, it's remarkable because when I retired, gosh, I would say about how long ago, 12, 13 years ago from playing, my body was just broken down. I mean, hamstring injuries, what have you. I played 5 or 6 years in the WNBA. And Sue and I came out the same year. So for what she's done, I think there's a lot of young talent in the league. And we didn't even see some of it. I mean, Elena Deladon didn't even play. Might be the best player in the WNBA.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, COVID obviously having implications, but I think it's cool. I'm proud of it. I'm proud of the way the NBA supported it. And I just think that, hey, keep going. I mean, it's been tough over the years, Josh, because not every team makes money. And so that in itself is hard. I played for the Chicago Sky, and it was tough because, you know, we never really profited. But you keep your head down and you keep going. I give a lot of credit to the great David Stern, of course, Adam Silver now. But, you know, David was incremental in just the continued plight and flight of women's basketball. And so God bless him and, you know, current commissioner Adam just for keep backing it, continuing to back it. And all the NBA guys out there, you know, including the late, great Kobe Bryant, who were such advocates for the women's game. So for a Canadian kid from Brockville, Ontario, it's pretty cool that I get to sit and do this now, but reflect back on that. And I have to tell you, my grandma, Doris, lives in Milton, Ontario, Josh. She's 97, yeah. And she is a diehard yeah. Blue Jays fan. Okay, diehard.
Okay.
She
wants okay,
everything.
Good.
So, hey, she was rooting for it here with the wild cards, but listen, yeah. We got to get back to some. I'm a big Joe Carter, Dave Winfield fan myself, so let's get back to the World Series there outside of my Cubs here in Chicago.
Well, you can tell your grandmother, somebody who is like, that's probably my primary focus here is usually
focus.
Baseball. I think good days, better days are ahead for the Blue Jays. I don't know about a World Series this year, but I think they're going in the right direction. I think there's going to be some good moments. Cannot thank you enough for this. This was a real blast, a lot of fun to talk football and WNBA with you. Good luck tomorrow on the sidelines there, or I guess in the first row, however it works in the COVID days, with that game in Indy with the Colts and Packers. And please, please, let's do this again soon.
Anytime you let me know. Appreciate it, Josh.